Hello and welcome back to the Security Week Vendor Showcase podcast. My guest this week is Delro Diaz. He's a senior director of product management at Palo Alto Networks. Can you give the audience a little bit of your background?
Sure, Ryan. Pleasure to be here, first of all. You know, it's always a great day to do a podcast on cybersecurity, that's for sure. But yeah, my role at Palo Alto, I'm part of our product management team, and I focus specifically on our network security portfolio in the context of industrial cybersecurity. So I've been there for 10 years. I've been squarely focused in this space since I joined. Definitely been a fun place for evolve, but things like what are needed to make our products more aligned to the needs of this market, you know, getting customer feedback, working with the industrial ecosystem to develop solutions for our end users and participating in consortia. That's the kind of work that I focus on, is kind of progressing not only from a Palo Alto standpoint, but industry standpoint, this role for cybersecurity for OT and ICS and SCADA environments.
Any specific industry you would say you specialize in, or is it across the board in these critical ICS environments?
It's across the board, but I think just because of where the threats are happening and the regulations and just the spend, we see a lot of activity in the manufacturing, utilities, and oil and gas space.
Fantastic. The focus of this interview is on the ICS threat landscape, you know, particularly this push to integrate IT and OT and get those two security, I don't want to call them systems, but working together. And I wanted to pick your brain on the idea of cyber resilience and the evolution of this cyber resilience over the years, especially as we see this increasing IT convergence of IT and OT environments. Can you elaborate a little bit on, you know, what this cyber resilience journey has looked like over the years and this converging of these two environments?
Yeah, Ryan, it's, I would say, been pretty dynamic and still taking shape. And as the growth of the attacks have come, this concept of cyber resilience has become more of a focus, and we're seeing more maturity. So more literature, more frameworks, and even early standards, like NIST even has one for resilient systems. So, you know, I wouldn't say that the concept is standardized or prescriptive by any means, but I will say that it's headed in the right direction. So definition-wise, you may hear variations, but I'll go with the version that cyber resilience refers to an organization's ability to prepare for, respond to, and recover from cyber attacks while maintaining the continuity of its operations. You know, in the context of OT, that's pretty important. What I say is traditionally, it's been focused on the recovery part, recovering and also limiting that blast radiance. But I think organizations have become more aware or attuned to A, anticipating the attacks, and B, making sure that you can respond. So it's not perfect, but I'll use like a boxer analogy. So being able to recover, that's really about just in general being a tough boxer, having that ability to evade if your opponent's becoming aggressive. And, you know, that's really from a cyber concept, the business continuity, disaster recovery planning. And then, but from a planning standpoint, okay, what are you weak at? And having that awareness, maybe it's your kidney and you're trying to protect a kidney blow that can be pretty devastating. Right. That's kind of like the vulnerability and risk analysis standpoint.
Right.
And then, of course, there's the respond part, being able to have an array of counter punches. And really, you're now getting into more of your processes and control. So, you know, these components, all three, I think, are starting to be integrated and matured from a cyber resilience concept. It's very dynamic. But the other thing that I'm seeing in terms of the way it's evolving is now becoming a topic, you know, cyber resiliency of the boards, right? Including, and maybe especially, I should say, the industrial organizations where their resiliency for their OT infrastructure has now become top of mind, has surfaced. So, but you know, specifically on OT, I would say the convergence has really influenced how much of this topic comes up and the abilities you need to develop. And the scope of resiliency may have been just corporate side where you have a lot of these digital systems. But now as these systems converge and get modernized, I think IT and OT is part of this scope of resiliency. And you look at things like Colonial Pipeline, Ryan, where, you know, it was the IT system that was compromised by ransomware, but OT was very dependent on that. And so having this as part of your scope is another thing that I've seen as part of the evolution in terms of cyber resilience. And most of the attacks, as we've seen, have been IT into OT. So even more of an argument in that the resilience needs to comprehend both domains. Right. So net-net, it's really cyber resilience from an enterprise cybersecurity architecture standpoint.
When you talk to customers and you talk to people in industry and you talk about merging IT and OT governance structures, what would you say have been the major challenges of getting this merger right? And how, you know, you mentioned these frameworks and some other things that have popped up to help, but how have these things impacted, you know, an organization's people, process, technology, you know, within that organization?
Yeah, that's a pretty big challenge in terms of, you know, making things work when you merge IT and OT. I would say organizational structures and priorities have really come to the forefront where you have these separate businesses of these companies probably built up over time through M&A, and they're used to running their own operations, soups to nuts, right? Including the IT infrastructure. So feeling that they have to comply to corporate standards and slow down their operations have sometimes been a hindrance to cooperating or adopting. So there's that, just kind of just this sense of autonomy that is inherent in a lot of these separate units. I think once maybe they say, okay, we'll try to collaborate. The other thing that emerges is the difference between culture between IT and OT, where uptime and safety is the biggest priority. And they'll do things that may be really awkward from an IT standpoint. Or they may not do things like, they may not patch because they want to keep things running even though there's some kind of a vulnerability. So there's this cultural divide that causes conflict and causes kind of bad feelings, and it further promotes this distancing or lack of cooperation.
Is that getting better?
It's definitely getting better. And, you know, we can touch on some specific things I've seen organizations do to make that smoother. But the other thing that I always also see is that limiting this adoption is the budget, right? Sometimes to make this type of integrated governance work, you're going to need to make some investment. So you need money, you need time and effort, and not every organization
is a costly thing.
Is it a very costly thing? It's pretty costly. I would think lots of the smaller organizations don't have the resources to do that. But I'm seeing more of this happen with bigger organizations where there's also, if you do it right, economies of scale that can be leveraged. It could help the company not only be more secure, but also really reduce some OPEX and even CAPEX.
And you have to do it. I mean, at some point you have to do it. I mean, being modern requires it, right? At some point, this cultural shift, this blending of things, everybody's got to be on the same page eventually, right?
You have to do it, but the reality is that it's a gray area. And don't get me wrong, I've seen organizations do a more distributed approach versus a centralized approach. And it works for them. And you'll have business units having their own teams, their own tech stack, their own processes, architectures, etc. They don't follow, they're not beholden by any centralized leader to follow this. It's at their own discretion. But at the same time, if you are able to do this right, you're going to be able to, as I mentioned, leverage these economies of scale, save money, have a better response time. I mean, the way I like to think about it is, hey, you go faster by yourself, but you go further together. And I think that's really, you want to just be fast and do your own thing, or really try to invest and get these big opportunities for improvement.
In addition to the people and the culture thing and getting everyone on the same page, can you talk a little bit about like process integrations that are critical for a mature IT OT security strategy? Like how do these what kind of integrations you're starting to see take root, and how are these critical for maturity in an IT OT?
There's a lot of processes that I would say fall into an enterprise architecture type of framework. And first and foremost, to think about this problem, I think understanding your risk, your assets and the associated risks, and then prioritizing that is the first step. And so that everybody has this common view of, hey, these are the things that matter most, and these are the things we're going to be investing in terms of having a consolidated view for securing these assets. So risk assessment and prioritization. And then from that will fall out this business continuity and disaster recovery. As I mentioned earlier, not just looking at it from an individual plant standpoint, but maybe you look at it from a manufacturing standpoint, the ERP systems, right? Or the other mm-hmm. systems that are more centralized and the interdependencies with other sites. And so, and what do we do if this particular system falls out? How do we keep the plant running? What is our backup plan? And how do we recover from this after, say, a ransomware attack? So that type of consolidated view across IT and OT, especially as we talked about earlier, the attacks originate from IT into OT. And then, of course, having a common strategy in terms of security. And this is really where concepts like zero trust come into play, where you have this unified mantra or philosophy and how you think about risk, how do you think about policy, and how do you operationalize that. And then from an OT standpoint, I think some of the things like vulnerability management have just kind of been ignored because, you know, as we all know, patching did not happen often in OT. And so that needs to be comprehended as well in terms of the overall vulnerability management program. The SOC is another area where we're seeing evolution in terms of having integrated IT and OT SOCs, where you're starting to even pull in subject matter experts from the OT side into the SOC team so that you have this awareness of, hey, what does this Modbus alert mean? A typical IT guy would not know that. So investments need to be made to mature even the SOC as you kind of look at this consolidated view. And of course, some other things that are more rudimentary in terms of training and awareness, but this cross-pollination between organizations and having an integrated simulation exercise, executive tabletop exercises, so that they also know what is the implication of an attack to the cyber, to the OT side, and how you need to respond from that standpoint.
We're starting to see this shift towards consolidated tech stacks for IT and OT. And can you give me a sense of what you're seeing, what you guys are building, what customers are demanding around like innovation driving this change? Like what does a consolidated tech stack look like?
Yeah, you mentioned consolidation. I kind of look at it from two standpoints. There's the stack consolidation, but there's also the domain consolidation between IT and OT. So let's start off with the stack consolidation. It's not the first time we've seen this happen. We've seen this happen before for IDS and sandboxing, URL filtering, and DNS security, where these point functions or services were suddenly collapsed into the gateway device. And every few years, you'll see companies who create these point solutions, which augment a platform as an add-on, right? And eventually that function too, it also gets absorbed. We've seen that play out as well for the OT tech stack, the protocol visibility, the IPS, the device identification, you know, the enforcement segmentation, and even anomaly detection and risk assessment. So you can get all that now from a single device. I think that's the big thing that we're seeing. And this is really enabled by the advanced inspection and compute capabilities that are within these gateways, leveraging the cloud infrastructure to scale the analytics and intelligence, and of course, using AI. Now, when it comes to domain consolidation, it's about being able to utilize the same gateway across your IT infrastructure.
Can you linger for a second on what domain consolidation means?
Yeah, domain consolidation really is being able to use the same technology on IT and OT. Versus trying to find these specialized IT gateway or OT gateway or cloud firewall, SASE firewall, rugged firewall, etc. It's really having this singular gateway that supports multiple form factors and can be applied in IT and OT. And right. The context is really what toggles between the different domains such that you can apply it for this particular manufacturing environment or utility environment or just a general corporate environment. That's really what I mean by domain. And so we're seeing that these gateways have this multi-personality type of phenomenon where they could be applied, you know, in different environments. And so the benefit is that you can, of course, have a unified platform for any environment.
You mentioned all these firewalls. I wanted to get down to the nitty-gritty about next-gen firewalls. And how does next-generation firewalls adapt to these needs that you're describing, this integrated IT-OT world? What do you think makes them suitable for this new landscape?
If you look at next-generation firewalls, it's really a fundamental deep packet inspection platform that's able to accommodate different threat services or different services in general. So for example, what I mentioned earlier, the IPS, IDS, URL, DNS, and sandboxing, and even OT security, you can just enable that on a next generation firewall. If the firewall is already in place, it's very easy to just turn up the services you need, and voila, you have this capability now to identify industrial devices, secure industrial devices, and associated threats. So it's really collapsing that OT tech stack into a single gateway. But at the same time, the next generation firewall comes in many flavors. It can be used in your environmentally controlled environment, plus or a rugged environment. You have rugged next generation firewalls. You can put it in AWS in the cloud or have a SASE firewall as a service. In whatever flavor next-generation firewall you decide to consume, which makes most sense for that OT environment, industrial clouds or on-prem, you have these services at your disposal, including OT, so that it could be applied. At the same time, in your data centers, your internet gateway is the same gateway. And so you have this consolidation of a network security platform. And you can centrally manage all these devices. So in the same way that this gateway can inspect Dropbox applications, it could also be used to inspect and secure a Siemens S7 protocol. In the same way that it can identify printers and cameras, it can identify PLCs and RTUs. And it can identify IT centric threats and zero days, as well as OT specific vulnerabilities and threats and zero days. So, and the beauty of this is that you can have this unified approach to zero trust across IT and OT.
And everything just works seamlessly together. You get your zero trust principles applied across the board, everything kind of intertwined.
Yeah, you hit an important point, is that if you try to do this with disjointed point solutions, it's going to be a nightmare trying to centrally manage that, because with all these different user interfaces and, you know, just approaches in how you administer these devices.
Is there a help with cost as well when this is happening?
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's both a CapEx and OpEx. Typically, when you work with a platform provider and you subscribe, there's things like enterprise licenses or volume discounts as you kind of look at it, not only from IT or individual plant standpoints, but when you combine that, you know, not to Palo Alto's advantage, but to the end user's advantage, they could leverage volume consumption type of scenarios. And also when you have these standard ways of approaching things, your teams just become more efficient. They know how to administer policies, manage policies, run these systems. And so operationally speaking, they also become more efficient, reducing the total cost of ownership.
Yeah, and you get your vendor relationship management. You're not managing multiple vendors around the place. It makes a lot of sense. We're running out of time, but I wanted to give you a chance to do some predictions for what might be the next big shift in your world, in this IT/OT cybersecurity world. What do you see coming? How should organizations prepare for whatever change is coming? And of course, I can't end this podcast without asking about AI and LLMs. Do you see AI technology, some AI-powered technology being part of this future tech stack?
Yeah, I'll start with things that are evolving, I think, that are really important. And it's not even about technology. I think organizations just need to think about what is their North Star, what is their framework for managing all of this integrate convergence and security dynamic changes, right? So it's really coming back to that zero trust approach that we mentioned, which is really a concept that started in IT, but we feel it's suitable for OT. So it helped organizations really think about this problem from a risk standpoint and have a better understanding of their environment. And from there, the architecture and granular controls needed to manage that risk, and being able to do that in a dynamic way in terms of the infrastructure that's changing and the threat landscape that's changing. Mm-hmm. But going forward, I think we see some interesting things happening in 5G private networks. We believe that this, while it's still in its infancy, will become pretty substantial in adoption. And so organizations need to really think about what are the security implications of 5G private networks. And now's a good time because it's still kind of slowly ramping. But when it becomes a big thing, we don't think that's the time when you should be trying to retrofit these environments. Secondly is, you know, AI, of course, is everybody's thinking about that. And we're no different. We're already using this in our OT security solution. For example, for baselining and anomaly detection, for even profiling devices. And more, one thing that we're doing for this from the zero trust standpoint is actually using the AI to understand what is the policy that you should implement, zero trust policy that you should implement. So we're already doing that. We're also implementing it in, for example, our Copilot technology to help users be more productive. And we think this will only grow more. And we're continuously finding new applications for this AI and machine learning.
Thank you very much, Del Rodillas, Senior Director of Product Management at Palo Alto Networks. Thank you for coming and sharing your thoughts with us.
My pleasure, Ryan. Thank you.